Wenn du aktiv tradest, willst du vor allem eins: volle Kontrolle. Genau dafür gibt's TradeGate Direct. Entwickelt von Profis für Profis mit Direktzugang zur liquidesten Retailbörse Europas, der TradeGate Exchange. Der große Vorteil? Du handelst dauerhaft kostenfrei. Marktübliche Spreads können anfallen. Über 7000 Aktien, 4000 ETPs und 5000 Mini-Futures. Jetzt auf tradegate.direct.
The new year begins with a new war. Early Saturday morning, the Americans attacked Venezuela with massive airstrikes, targeting, among other places, the capital, Caracas. A U.S. Special Forces unit kidnapped the incumbent president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, and brought them to New York. They are to stand trial there for terrorism and drug trafficking. What is happening in Venezuela right now? Why are these attacks occurring now? And what is the background?
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Welcome to In Crisis Mode. I am Jan Jessen, politics editor at the NRZ and war and crisis reporter for the Funke Media Group. You can read my reports in the Funke titles, including the NRZ, the WAZ, the Braunschweiger Zeitung and the Berliner Morgenpost. US President Donald Trump has confirmed that Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro has been arrested along with his wife. US troops have attacked Venezuela. Explosions were heard in Caracas and a state of emergency has been declared in the country. Europe is calling for de-escalation. Russia speaks of armed aggression, and Iran has also expressed solidarity with Venezuela. I would like to discuss this with Dr. Claudia Ziller. She is a Venezuela expert at the Berlin-based German Institute for International and Security Affairs, SWP, where she works as a senior fellow in the Americas Research Group. Welcome, Dr. Ziller. What does all this mean for Venezuela and for the international order?
Damit ist zunächst mal die große Frage geklärt, warum es diese so starke militärische Präsenz.
This finally answers the big question of why there is such a heavy US military presence in the Caribbean. What does all this mean for Venezuela and the international order? We now know that this was not merely symbolic and that the pressure on the regime was not intended to be exerted solely from the sea, so to speak. I don't think the people in Venezuela expected this. Venezuelans have become very accustomed to living through crises and dealing with threats. It has been part of daily political life for several decades, and I can understand why, during these times, people focus more on their private lives and their families. Especially when it's unclear what is going to happen, when the future is an open question, it is difficult to even begin to process it.
Wenn es nicht klar ist, was passieren soll, wenn die Frage einfach eine offene Frage ist, kann man sich damit auch schlecht auseinandersetzen.
The US accuses the Venezuelan regime of being largely responsible for the flood of drugs into the United States and has therefore classified the regime as a terrorist organization. In recent months, there have been repeated attacks on alleged drug boats in the waters of Venezuela. Now, Maduro, the president whom this special forces unit, apparently Delta Force, kidnapped along with his wife, is being charged in New York as a drug trafficker and terrorist. Is there any substance to these allegations?
Diese Begründung scheint mir nicht überzeugend zu sein. Zunächst mal,
this justification does not seem convincing to me. First of all, Venezuela does not play as central a role as a drug-producing country compared to other Latin American states, like Bolivia, Peru, and Colombia. For transit, Ecuador is much more relevant because the main route from South America to the U.S. runs across the Pacific. What leaves Venezuela by sea tends to go to Europe. Furthermore, the main drug problem in the U.S. is fentanyl, which is transported across the Mexican border. Therefore, the argument is unconvincing. There is also counter-evidence. Trump pardoned the former president of Honduras, who had been sentenced to 45 years in prison for drug trafficking. It just doesn't add up.
Drogenhandel für 45 Jahre Freiheitsstrafe bestraft war. Und also das passt alles nicht zusammen.
Naturally, one wonders, what is the real reason for this intervention?
Also wir können sehr schlecht die Motivationen.
It is very difficult for us to discern the motivations of Trump and his administration. We only have clues based on their actions and justifications, which are often contradictory and not necessarily logical. They don't form a clear picture where everything fits together. What is clear is that two other factors play a role, perhaps a major one. The ideological orientation of the Venezuelan government, the fact that it is a leftist, not a right-wing government, and the fact that Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world. Access to raw materials is key. This variable was also explicitly mentioned in the U.S. National Security Strategy, that the U.S. intends to secure access to critical raw materials in certain regions within its own continent.
Im eigenen Kontinent, die USA, sich den Zugang zu kritischen Rohstoffen zu bestimmten Regionen sichern will.
So now people are wondering, Maduro has been kidnapped, yet we see the Venezuelan government still calling for resistance. Has the regime been toppled by Maduro's kidnapping, or is this just a symbolic event?
Gestürzt ist das Regime auf keinen Fall.
The regime has certainly not been toppled. Only the leadership was kidnapped through a measure that violates international law. The question is, what happens next? The regime does not consist only of President Maduro, but of a broad civil-military apparatus that is deeply intertwined and dominant in all areas of the state. The question now is, what will happen? Will there be fractures? How will various actors within the regime position themselves? And how will the population and the opposition behave?
Und wie wird sich auch die Bevölkerung und die Opposition verhalten?
What is your impression of how the population is behaving based on what you're hearing from Venezuela? There are reports from the US that Venezuelan exiles are celebrating the attack on Caracas. But in Caracas itself, people have gathered to express their anger and grief. People are also said to have died in these attacks, not just military personnel, but civilians as well. Exact figures haven't been published yet, but there were evidently fatalities. So, people are on the streets in Caracas to express their anger and sorrow. Do you believe the majority of the population supports these attacks and believes the regime must go? Or does the regime still have significant support?
Wir wissen aus Umfragen, dass die Diaspora, die venezolanische Diaspora, eher für eine Intervention.
We know from surveys that the diaspora is generally in favor of intervention, even by military means. We also know that the vast majority of the population wants a change of government and even a change of regime. However, it does not appear that a similar majority favors a U.S. military intervention. The population distinguishes between a change of power and an intervention by a foreign superpower.
Machtwechsel und Eingriff einer ausländischen Großmacht.
And what is the current situation? Do you have any clarity on what is happening on the ground? What is the regime doing right now? A national state of defense has been declared. People have been called to arms by the vice president and the defense minister, among others. The political leadership has made it very clear that they view what has happened as an act of unjustified military aggression. Now, of course, the question is, what is the mood among the people? As I mentioned, there are reports of demonstrations of solidarity, grief, and anger in Caracas. But is this widespread, or is it just a few regime supporters, while the rest of the population holds back?
In der aktuellen Situation und in der kurzen der Zeit erlaube ich mir kein Urteil darüber, wie die Bevölkerung das betrachtet und wie die ersten.
Given the current situation and the short time frame, I wouldn't venture a judgment on how the general population views this, aside from the reactions you mentioned. The Vice President and the Defense Minister have spoken, and there are calls for mobilization, though, so far, it is a mobilization of the armed forces and the colectivos, armed groups. I think a nationalist awakening cannot be ruled out, because, as I said, the population differentiates. They want the current rulers gone, but not necessarily by the hand of the U.S. The decisive factor will be what happens in the coming days, how different factions of the regime position themselves, and how the opposition reacts. One fear among the population might be that they won't actually have a chance to shape future developments, that both the Venezuelan people and the opposition will be overshadowed by this intervention and the role of the U.S. That is a fundamental concern.
Also, dass sowohl Venezolanerinnen und Venezolaner als auch die Opposition überschattet wird durch diese Intervention und durch die Rolle der USA. Das ist grundsätzlich zu befürchten.
That's very interesting, because we hear similar things regarding Iran. In Iran, we are seeing new protests by people who are both struggling with the economic situation and questioning the regime. This isn't the first time. It happened in 2022 and 2023. What we hear from the country is that people want democratization, but they don't want it imported from the outside or a regime change brought about by bombing. At least in Iran, people fear it could end up like Afghanistan, Iraq, or Libya, where forced regime change led to chaos and instability that persists to this day, or in the case of Afghanistan, even the return of the old regime. Do you think people have similar fears, that a regime change forced by outside bombing could lead to chaos?
Einmal kann es zum Chaos führen. Das andere ist, ob dann die nationalen Kräfte eine Chance bekommen, den Prozess.
Firstly, it can lead to chaos. Secondly, there is the question of whether national forces will get a chance to shape the process. And thirdly, what happens to the access to resources? I believe a broad majority of the population opposes the national kleptocracy, the self-enrichment of the political and military elite. But I don't believe they would want to replace this with foreign interests siphoning off the oil. The claim to participation in that wealth, that oil production and exports should benefit the population and contribute to the country's prosperity, is something the people will not want to give up.
Der Export von Öl auch der Bevölkerung zugutekommt, dass das zum Wohlstand des Landes beiträgt, darauf wird die Bevölkerung nicht verzichten wollen.
Dr. Ziller, what needs to happen now? The opposition is holding back for the reasons you mentioned. But what would have to happen to actually achieve a regime change? Is it realistic?
Also ein Regimewechsel erfolgt nicht einfach, indem die Spitze entführt wird. Das setzt viel mehr voraus.
A regime change doesn't happen just by kidnapping the person at the top. It requires much more, and there would have to be a clear break among the actors who sustain the regime. A majority, or a minority that controls the weapons, must be able to assert its will to transition to a different regime. However, we should distinguish between regime change and democratization. Democratization is much more demanding and long-term. Regime change simply means the ruling regime is replaced, be it the person, the ideology, or the logic of governance. But that doesn't necessarily mean democratization. If someone from the political right takes over, but continues to rule undemocratically while simply maintaining different relations with the U.S., we would have to call it a regime change, but not necessarily democratization. Not unless that government eventually relinquishes power and allows for free and competitive elections where the Venezuelan people choose their own leaders.
Und andere Beziehungen zu den USA pflegt und eine andere Außenpolitik, wahrscheinlich werden wir von einem Regimewechsel reden müssen, aber nicht unbedingt von einer Demokratisierung, wenn diese Regierung nicht irgendwann mal die Macht aufgibt und freie und kompetitive Wahlen zulässt und dann die venezolanische Bevölkerung sich ihre Regierende aussucht.
You mentioned that for regime change, it is necessary for those who want to bring it about to be armed. This suggests that there could be internal conflicts within Venezuela. Do you believe the country is facing the threat of a civil war or at least an armed conflict?
Also ich würde nicht vom Bürgerkrieg sprechen mit Betonen auf Bürgerinnen und Bürger. Ja, also dann wären so möglicherweise der Regime.
I wouldn't speak of a civil war with the emphasis on citizens. It would more likely be regime factions fighting each other. Yes, though I don't see that immediately yet. I haven't seen any signs of it. Of course, the situation could develop very dynamically in the coming hours and days, and I might have to revise my interpretation. It doesn't necessarily have to involve violence, but violence could play a part. The decisive factor is whether those who control the weapons, the armed forces, are willing to submit to the control of a new group. In Venezuela, such a group will always be civil military at first. I can't imagine a purely civilian group emerging immediately to take control and issue orders to the military. And so far, we've ignored the issue of basic services. This country isn't just about politics. Utilities must be kept running. The population needs food. Hospitals must function. The military is responsible for many of these areas, and the question is, whose orders will they follow?
Die Krankenhäuser müssen weiter funktionieren. Also, und es gibt eine Reihe von Bereichen, wo das Militär tätig ist, wofür das Militär zuständig ist. Und die Frage ist, welchen Befehlen werden da gefolgt?
U.S. Secretary of State Rubio said that with these airstrikes and the kidnapping of Maduro, the military operation is over. But if the Americans really want access to Venezuela's oil reserves or want to help forces into power that are more aligned with the U.S., then I don't think it ends here. As you said, kidnapping the head of the regime doesn't automatically destabilize it. How likely is it that the U.S. will send ground troops?
Ich weiß nicht, ob wir von Bodentruppen ausgehen können, aber ich kann mir schlecht vorstellen, dass die USA.
I don't know if we can assume ground troops, but I find it hard to imagine the U.S. foregoing the chance to influence future developments. 1906. I believe what has happened so far will be followed by a claim to continue shaping Venezuelan politics. How can that happen without some kind of military presence, either as the main actor or to provide backing to those the U.S. considers its friends in the country? Those are two possible scenarios for me right now.
Die Freunde in dem Land von den USA betrachtet, zu unterstützen, ihnen eine Rückendeckung zu geben. Also das sind zwei mögliche Szenarien für mich jetzt.
What will the regime do now? We mentioned the vice president and the defense minister. Both seem very determined. They say they will defend the revolution and the country's independence and will not tolerate this act of aggression. In the media, it has been described as a colonial war. How will they react? Striking back militarily would be difficult. What will happen?
Ich finde es sehr schwierig, vorherzusagen. Ja, also militärisch hat Venezuela.
It's very hard to predict. Militarily, Venezuela has little chance of retaliation against the U.S. But the question is what happens within their own ranks. I have no insight into that at the moment. Whether we can still speak of the regime as a unit or if cracks are appearing. So far, I haven't observed a split, and the logical reaction was to appeal to nationalist sentiments and call for mobilization. But it's very difficult to create scenarios right now.
Das Ansprechen der nationalistischen Gefühle und der Aufruf, sich zu mobilisieren und das Land zu verteidigen. Aber ich finde im Moment sehr schwierig, Szenarien aufzustellen, was demnächst passieren wird.
Over the past few weeks, I had the impression the regime was becoming increasingly nervous. People on the ground reported more checkpoints and more armed personnel on the streets. There were problems for foreign tourists. An acquaintance of mine was held for several days at the airport in Caracas. Is an increase in repression to be expected?
Damit rechne ich tatsächlich, denn ich verfolge Venezuela seit einigen Jahren, die Entwicklungen dort.
I do expect that. I've been following Venezuela for years, and lately, whenever the regime felt under pressure, mostly from within, it responded with more repression, more arbitrariness, more kidnappings, arrests, torture, and purges in its own ranks. I expect that now as well, as a desperate act.
In den eigenen Reihen. Und damit rechne ich auch im Sinne eines verzweifelten Aktes, ja.
The Latin American neighbors likely won't ignore this. Milei, the Argentine president, who is very close to Trump, celebrated. On the other hand, there was quiet criticism from Colombia. I imagine that countries across Latin America aren't necessarily pleased to see the US returning to the policies of the 70s and 80s. Secret CIA operations to topple disliked governments and install favorable ones. What is your impression? Is there horror or joy?
Bedauerlicherweise beobachten wir jetzt vor allem schnelle ideologische
Unfortunately, we are mainly seeing quick, ideologically driven reactions. Governments close to Trump welcomed it immediately, while those with tense relations, like Cuba and Colombia, reacted defensively. But I think more relevant are the reactions based on international law. We need a clear stance, not just in Latin America, but in the international community, for international law and non-violent conflict resolution. Typical ideological reactions don't strengthen the rules we need for peaceful coexistence in the world. You've called these actions a violation of international law. Why? The principle of non-use of force has very few exceptions. Self-defense, or the responsibility to protect. But the latter requires a UN Security Council resolution, which does not exist in this case.
Und das ist in diesem Fall nicht vorhanden.
In the case of Russia, the West reacted quickly. While you can't compare them directly, both involve a blatant breach of international law. How must Europe react? To put it bluntly, do we have to sanction the US?
Das erwarte ich nicht, dass Europa die USA sanktionieren, aber eine klare Verurteilung wäre wichtig.
I don't expect Europe to sanction the US, but a clear condemnation would be important if multilateralism and international law are to be preserved. This doesn't mean downplaying that Maduro is a dictator. We must treat even the guilty according to the law. We don't torture criminals just because they are criminals. Guilt must be proven in a proper process. We have these rules for difficult cases and for the treatment of those who themselves break the law. We don't gain the right to break the law just because others do. My impression is that many states, in fighting evil, end up becoming like their enemies, because they claim they can't stick to their principles to fight these criminals. That is fatal. It is the greatest danger to peaceful coexistence.
Die größte Gefahr für ein friedliches Zusammenleben.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ziller.
Thank you.
After our discussion with Claudia Ziller, there was a press conference with Donald Trump. In many ways, he confirmed much of what Dr. Ziller had told us. For example, he openly stated that oil was a major reason for the operation. Of course, he delivered it with his usual flair, calling it the largest, or perhaps most spectacular, military action since World War II, comparable only to the targeted killings of Qasem Soleimani, head of the Revolutionary Guards, or Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, former leader of ISIS, both operations carried out under his watch. Trump also framed the operation as a response to Maduro being a narco-terrorist, claiming he had launched a drug-related campaign against the US and was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans. Yet, he was strikingly candid about the role of oil. US companies, he said, would move in, rebuild the infrastructure, and sell the oil, purportedly for the benefit of the Venezuelan people. He also made an interesting point. The US would run the country until a stable transition could be ensured, though he didn't clarify exactly how. There are people, he said, who could do this on the ground. When asked about the need for US troops, he didn't shy away. "We are not afraid to have boots on the ground," he said, referring to the commando forces that detained Maduro. Moreover, he warned that if things don't go as planned, the US is ready to launch a second, much larger wave of attacks. His message was clear. If the US does not gain access to the oil, or if a government isn't installed that follows American interests, further violence could follow. Still, the detention of Maduro does not automatically mean regime change. He is just the head of a broad, entrenched regime, similar to Iran's system, with many officials benefiting from the status quo. So it's far from certain that events will unfold as Trump envisions. As we've seen elsewhere, take Gaza's unresolved issues for instance, grand plans often run into reality. What will be decisive in Venezuela is whether fractures emerge in the civil-military apparatus and how the population and opposition respond. Unfortunately, people protesting could face repression, and the region is divided in its response. Brazil's president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, has clearly condemned the operation as a violation of international law that could set a dangerous precedent for the region. Colombia's president voiced similar concerns, while Argentina's president welcomed the move. Many Latin American countries are wary of a US-imposed agenda, and Europe now faces the challenge of responding to clear breaches of international law, regardless of political sympathies. Invading a sovereign country without a UN Security Council mandate, abducting its president along with his wife, who cannot reasonably be held politically responsible, and taking them to New York is, as Dr. Ziller emphasized, an unmistakable violation of international law. Following Maduro's removal, the Supreme Court appointed Vice President Delcy Rodriguez as his successor. She has expressed willingness to engage in talks with the US, yet Trump continues to verbally attack the government in Caracas and other countries, including Colombia. For now, it remains to be seen how the situation will develop. Let's hope Venezuela avoids escalation, civil war, or widespread violence, and that this year does not start with further conflict. This special episode of our podcast, In Crisis Mode, was produced by Alexander Baumeis, also a journalist at a Funke Media Group radio station. All episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. New episodes are usually released every other Wednesday. Follow us and leave a like. It really helps our work. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and see you next time.
Ein Podcast.
Podcast von Funke.
Ein Podcast von Funke.